produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, February 28th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Joined up with talented volunteer activists at your local National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter, you can find them at norml.org and click on Local Chapters. While you're at it, stop by our blog at stash.normal.org. You can check the links on all of our news stories, download our PodSafe music, read commentary from myself and other marijuana activists, and leave your comments in response. It's the cannabis community's online home at the blog only Normal can deliver, your daily audio stash at stash.normal.org. Today we mourn the passing of a great pioneer in marijuana law reform, the conservative author William F. Buckley Jr., who passed away yesterday at the age of 82. Longtime friend Richard Cowan, the editor of MarijuanaNews.com and former executive director of Normal, joins us to remember his friend right after our hemp headlines. In our musical break, Cannabis Carrie brings us some great music from a South African band with the perfect name for the stash. It's Chronic Clan with a reggae R&B tune called Gimme Da Weed. And don't forget, Thursday is Cannabis and the Law Day here on The Stash, so we finish out the podcast with civil rights attorney Bill Rittenberg from New Orleans and our discussion of the concept of states' rights and why that's a problematic argument for medical marijuana, especially when argued in the South. We've got a lot to cover, so sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Medical marijuana dispensaries banned in Contra Costa County, California. Medical marijuana dispensaries won't be allowed to open in Contra Costa's unincorporated areas as county supervisors Tuesday unanimously agreed to ban them. Too often, dispensaries are a gateway for people with questionable medical ailments to obtain marijuana and then sell it on the streets, supervisors said. Quote, "While I am empathetic to patients with serious and terminal illness, the marijuana dispensaries have attracted both criminal and nuisance problems to the communities where they operate," end quote, said Supervisor Mary Pifo of Discovery Bay. Such facilities have been prohibited since the county approved a temporary moratorium in April of 2006. But the moratorium expires April 10th, which is why supervisors fast-tracked the permanent ordinance banning land uses that violate state or federal law. Banning new facilities will inspire a black market for medical marijuana sales, patient advocates told supervisors. Quote, The smart thing to do would be to regulate these dispensaries and have a safe environment rather than people having to go through backdoor means, end quote, said Armando Soto with Americans for Safe Access, a medical marijuana advocacy group. Supervisors said that patients are still free to smoke marijuana in their homes for medical purposes or grow it themselves as permitted by state law. Quote, the use of medical marijuana is allowed by patients who qualify, said Supervisor Susan Bonilla of Concord. We're not changing that provision, end quote. Oh, sure, the Contra Costa patients can use marijuana, if only they can find some. And then they can't get it at a legal regulated dispensary, so they're going to get it from an illegal, unregulated drug dealer. Nothing like government providing price supports and guaranteed clientele to black market operators, huh? This insanity is going to continue so long as marijuana remains illegal for healthy people. I still don't get why the cancer patient and the healthy person sharing a doobie means one of them's a criminal deserving of prison. So long as non-patients have to pay exorbitant black market prices, that black market will continue to set the prices and the public's perception of the legal dispensaries in California. You just can't have a black market run alongside a white market without both of them becoming a little bit gray. Marijuana use prompted attack, trial told, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. A man who has admitted killing his stripper girlfriend was suffering from a major mental illness at the time of the deadly beating, a forensic psychiatrist has told the jury at a murder trial in Brampton. Dr. Stephen Hucker said it was, quote, highly likely that Ryan Buckner was in a psychotic state when he brutally beat Audrey Coate to death, then ran down the street stark naked, throwing money to people, and later telling police he was God. Although Hucker believed Buckner was, quote, completely normal when he interviewed him 2 years later, he was convinced the accused man was suffering from a mental illness when he killed his girlfriend on July 31, 2005. Hucker, the first witness called by defense attorney Aston Hall, also believed Buckner's mental illness had been induced by chronic marijuana use. Hucker also told the court he didn't think Buckner's mental illness was, quote, an act, because he wasn't sophisticated enough to pretend to be delusional or schizophrenic. Buckner was a daily user of marijuana. Hucker said studies have determined that frequent users of cannabis have double the risk of developing mental illness or schizophrenia. Well, apparently Dr. Hucker doesn't keep up on his marijuana studies. Because according to the journal Schizophrenia Research, in a study published last May, quote, marijuana use is not associated with heightened symptoms of schizophrenia, according to data to be published in the journal Schizophrenia Research. Investigators at London's Institute of Psychiatry assessed whether the prior use of cannabis in patients with schizophrenia was associated with appreciable changes in schizophrenic symptoms compared with patients who had no history of marijuana use. Investigators reported no statistically significant differences in symptomology between schizophrenic patients who were or were not cannabis users after controlling for patients' age, sex, and ethnicity. Researchers also failed to find any evidence that cannabis users with schizophrenia were more likely to have a family member with the disorder. These findings argue against a distinct schizophrenic-like psychosis caused by cannabis, authors concluded. So you see, Buckner may indeed be mentally ill. I mean, that seems pretty obvious that he was. But his marijuana use was probably in response to his illness, not the cause of his illness. Come on, if you had voices in your head screaming at you that your girlfriend is a demon and you need to brutally kill her and run down the street naked, you might just try to quiet that little voice in your head with some weed too, wouldn't you? BBC reporter smokes marijuana to enhance story. London, England. The BBC is trading reality television for method journalism in a new program scheduled to air later this year on BBC Three. The investigative report, aimed at 16 to 34-year-olds, examines the controversial subject of recreational and medicinal marijuana use. In addition to relying on studies and interviews, the show's host, Nikki Taylor, takes a more Hunter S. Thompson approach and tries the drug herself. With cameras rolling, she goes on a fact-finding trip to Amsterdam and also participates in a study at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London, where she is injected with THC, the active ingredient in cannabis, as part of a medical study. Thus far, the BBC is standing by the show, issuing a statement that reads in part, quote, Nikki Taylor is a critically acclaimed journalist whose approach involves becoming fully immersed in her subject. She takes a small amount of the drug over a very short period of time in order to fully understand the effects of drugs on her body and reflect on this for the benefits of the audience, end quote. But not everybody is cool with Nikki's stoner vision. Marjorie Wallace, the chief executive of SANE, a mental health charity, is quoted in the Telegraph saying, quote, "It is difficult to see what can be learnt from this experiment. Cannabis affects no two individuals the same way," end quote. Additionally, members of Parliament have reportedly raised the question of whether the show might actually encourage viewers, or even less acclaimed writers, to experiment. Say, what a novel idea, that you might get someone to actually try marijuana before offering opinions on it? Everybody knows that Nikki Taylor's health is not in jeopardy. Marijuana's relative safety has been known for years. It's not going to kill her or make her go schizo. As for leading more people to try marijuana, that would be bad how, exactly? Despite the numerous studies and evidence that show liberalizing cannabis laws does not lead to greater use of cannabis, despite the fact that since California's Prop 215 legalized medical marijuana in the state in 1996, we've seen teen use rates of marijuana drop, and despite the fact that the Netherlands, which is more tolerant of marijuana use, has lower marijuana usage rates than the United States, despite all that, even if it did make more people try marijuana, so what?
Hi, I'm Rick Steves, and you're enjoying Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Please take a moment right now to support this organization by donating online.
Normal remembers William F. Buckley, outspoken marijuana law reform advocate and one-time Normal advisory board member. Washington, D.C. Conservative author and political pundit William F. Buckley died on Wednesday, February 27th, from complications from diabetes and emphysema. He was 82 years old. Though most well known for his politically conservative writings as founder of the magazine National Review, Mr. Buckley also spoke out routinely against the criminal prohibition of cannabis. He is believed to have penned more than 40 syndicated columns criticizing America's war on drugs. Quote, "Even if one takes every reefer madness allegation of the prohibitionists at face value," Buckley once wrote, "marijuana prohibition has done far more harm to far more people than marijuana ever could," end quote. Another choice quotation from William F. Buckley comes from an article pleading with elected officials for change. Quote, "I leave it at this, that it is outrageous to live in a society whose laws tolerate sending young people to life in prison because they grew or distributed a dozen ounces of marijuana. I would hope that the good offices of your vital profession would mobilize to recommend the legalization of the sale of most drugs, except to minors," end quote. As time passed, the medical marijuana movement led Buckley to write, quote, "The anti-marijuana campaign is a cancerous tissue of lies, undermining law enforcement, aggravating the drug problem, depriving the sick of needed help, and suckering well-intentioned conservatives and countless frightened parents," end quote. William F. Buckley was a talk show host, novelist, sailor, debater, and once a candidate for mayor of New York City. His Ivy League demeanor was a trademark on his show, Firing Line, and he was a gifted orator with an immense vocabulary, which he regularly employed to skewer liberal policies and politicians. But his belief in the futility and destructiveness of marijuana prohibition brought him friends and allies from every political persuasion. One such ally is former Normal executive director and current MarijuanaNews.com editor Richard Cowan, who shared a 48-year friendship with William F. Buckley. Richard Cowan joins us by telephone from Palm Springs, California, to remember his friend, Bill Buckley. Normal expresses its sincere condolences to the friends and family of William F. Buckley. All right. Well, it's under unfortunate circumstances that I get to meet for the first time our next guest on the Daily Audio Stash, who is Richard Cowan, who is the editor of MarijuanaNews.com. He was also the executive director of Normal from 1992 through 1995. And the unfortunate circumstance that brings us together today is mourning the passing of conservative icon and pundit William F. Buckley, Jr. So, Richard, sorry about the sad circumstances, but welcome to the Stash.
Well, I'm glad to get a chance to talk, and I say sorry about the circumstances, except that, you know, that Bill was 82 and not in good health, and he had lost his wife, who was an amazing woman, a year ago. And so, as Bill liked to quote Job, "My Redeemer liveth," and so I'm happy for him, I say that. I'm very sorry for us, because he was absolutely an amazing person. I just, you know, thinking back about this, and just, you know, obviously in a situation like this, whatever, you know, whoever it is, you get a rush of memories, and I have a lot of those about Bill, but he really did change the course of my life. I mean,
well, your relationship with him goes back quite a few years, doesn't it?
49 years, I got the feeling. As I said on when I wrote that brief little bit on, sort of, actually just part of a tribute on Marijuana News last night, that he, of course, went to Yale. He was in the class of 1950, but that was because of the war. It was a bit delayed. I was in the class of 62, and so in 1958 I was a freshman and sort of playing around in conservative campus politics, and so he came to speak there, and I had no idea who he was or never heard of National Review. I just, you know, he was I didn't know who he was. They'd written God and Man at Yale. But other than that, you know, it's just, you know, he was a conservative somebody or other. And so we went out, and I had a few drinks, like any good 18-year-old. And one thing also about Buckley was he could really hold his liquor. Fortunately, was sort of more amused by me than otherwise, and so we got as I got more involved in conservative youth politics. I was a founding member of Young Americans for Freedom, which was at his ancestral home in Sharon, Connecticut, so you know, over the years it developed, and then. When I got involved with Normal in 1972, Keith Straub still jokes about it, because when I walked into his office looking like the former head of the Yale Young Republicans that I was, and actually I was in Washington looking for a job with the committee to reelect Nixon, and I always say I went to work for a better class of criminals. Anyway, that I did, you know, spend that summer of 72 working with Keith there in Washington. And so I thought, well, you know, I sent a letter. I had never written anything for publication before. In fact, the last thing I had written out in terms of a narrative was, you know, some paper in college. And so I sat down and wrote a thing on why conservatives should support the legalization of marijuana. And sent it off to Bill with a note, cover note. I said, "Dear Bill, guess who's gone to pot?" And a couple of weeks back, and his little short note from Bill, and he said, I'll never forget the way he said it. His, "My inclination is to run it, and National Review has a way of indulging my inclination."
Helps when you founded the magazine, right?
Yeah, he founded National Review I guess it was about 50 years ago. I think it was, 50.
Well, yeah, 50,
that's
about right.
Anyway, something like that. Yeah, but anyway, 1955. Yeah. But anyway, they published the article in the December 6th issue of 1972, and that really led to many other things. For a while I wrote a newspaper column, which was great fun, and that was really not only great fun, but great exercise in terms of writing and finding out, oh, I can write, or at least I think I can. So
Now, this article that you wrote, this ended up being the cover story on that 72 issue of National Review.
Yeah, it was the cover story. It had the picture on the cover was of some, look like teenage kids, middle class white teenage kids, not the sort of people for whom the marijuana laws were written, being arrested and booked in some place, and it was quite clear that that they were in trouble, and so that it really caused a real stir at the time. Maybe the New York Times, believe it or not, actually invited me to write a column about it because it was so unthinkable.
Well, sure, it was very very unlikely for conservatives back at that time to be in support of changing our prohibition laws. But William F. Buckley was always a strong advocate for ending of adult marijuana prohibition.
Oh yeah, in fact, one of the things that really I found annoying in a couple of the obits and commentaries is that they referred to his bill as being, well, he was either in favor of the decriminalization of marijuana. Oh, my God. Well, excuse me, but this is, let me look at my calendar, 2008, and he was in favor of the legalization of marijuana, and, in fact, he was opposed to the drug war in toto. And there were, basically two reasons for it. One is that he was basically a libertarian, but he also was pragmatic. He could see what did and did not work, and then over the years he saw, he personally knew. He introduced me to Peter McWilliams, who was effectively murdered by the federal government, and Peter was author. Many books, and a medical marijuana patient, and was arrested and deprived of cannabis, and there's a lot about that. There's a link to that lots of links to that for that federal marijuana news. But he wrote about that. He about the prosecution of Peter and McWilliams and Todd McCormick. He also denounced the prosecution of Steve Covey, and was so he was attuned to the atrocities of the drug war, very much so. So he, that was something that was simply inconsistent with his fundamental beliefs as both a Christian and a libertarian.
Yeah, I often have to point out, I'm out here on the West Coast, and as are you, and a lot of times our allies here in marijuana law reform will be more from the left, liberal, progressive side, and mm-hmm. they fail to realize that, prohibition is definitely an anti-conservative stance if you really get down to what conservatism is all about. Personal privacy, keeping small government, not wasting money on wasteful government programs, all of which prohibition is definitely guilty of.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And a lot of people, the fact is, and I rag on the left a lot because progressives of course we're against, in favor of legalizing marijuana, of course, but then never deal with it. And this is, the fact is that if you really look back over it, the right, if you mean Buckley and Friedman and this sort, the libertarians have been much more outspoken against the drug war than progressives have been. And, even you take Dianne Frankenstein, as I call her, the former mayor of San Francisco, she makes my flesh crawl. This woman has so betrayed her origins, her people, you know, there in terms of, you know, and just, you know, turning her back on this, so the people of Northern California that were her original constituency, now the whole state, you know, this is just shameful. And so, you know, the fact is that in many ways, we've had more reliable, consistent support from, you know, libertarians on the right, certainly, than we have from civil libertarians on the left. And so that's, I find, enormously frustrating. But, you know, the fact is that when Buckley did this, as I said, I'd, and a lot of people thought I convinced him, but, you know, I think he was already convinced because of, you know, his fundamental beliefs. And so he just, you know, my little article was, you know, an occasion or excuse, opportunity to really speak out on it. And, you know, and he really did catch a lot of flack about it. He told me shortly after, he said, "It's the most controversial thing we've done since we denounced the John Birch Society." But, you know, it was, you know, when he, again, it was, ironically, it was just 1986, 14 years later, they ran another cover article of mine, or another article of mine has a cover article called, you know, "How the Narcs Created Crack," and basically, you know, the economics of contraband, and so, which is simply what I call, you know, the iron law of prohibition, which is, you know, the heart of the enforcement, the heart of the drugs, because, you know, to make it really simple, there were rum runners, there were no beer runners.
Right.
And so this is something we've seen, you know, repeatedly, is every time the government has come down on marijuana, we've had, you know, really seen the hard drug problem become worse. And it happens again and again, and of course the government solution is to do it again.
Yeah, if it didn't work the first time, try it harder with more money.
Exactly. But, you know, it's, this is, you know, a part of people, I don't really don't understand the degree of Buckley's legacy in the sense that I think that the two most influential people of the second half of the 20th century were, in Americans, that is, were Buckley and Martin Luther King. And unfortunately, Dr. King didn't live long enough to become friends with Bill Buckley, but last night watching the news hour on PBS, which aside from their making the mistake of saying he was in favor of decrim, he was talking about that, you know, his view of the world, his political views, where he said basically the same as Dr. King's, that they were based on Christianity, and because of their Christian view was the you know, the individual was paramount, and the freedom of the individual. And this is, you know, unfortunately, we look at what conservatism has become, which is corrupt and lazy. But when he started, it was anything but. It was, you know, it was intellectually rigorous and too far from power to be corrupted. But, you know, Lord Acton, who had a lot in common with Buckley, was right. So, you know, we now have to deal with this, you know, this legacy, yeah, of the corruption of what was originally the idea of individual freedom. And it's hard to believe, looking at George W. Bush.
Yeah, I've read lots of Buckley's articles, especially with regard to modern conservatism and how it's gone off the rails. And we could only hope that the modern conservative movement could go back to the ideals of people like William F. Buckley, who just want government to leave us alone. We've got to wrap things up here, but I want to thank you, Richard Cowan, who's the editor of MarijuanaNews.com. You can check a link for that out on our blog at stash.normal.org. He's also the executive director of Normal from 92 to 95, and a friend of William F. Buckley's from way back in the day, almost 49 years. Thanks for joining us today, Richard.
I'm glad to do it, and I hope to talk again soon under happier circumstances.
I agree. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, Thursday Stash, it's time for Chronic Clan. Yes, for our musical break today, Cannabis Carrie brings us a reggae beat with rhyme and lyrics that demand our attention. Today's music hit gets right to the point. Chronic Clan consists of Zorro, G, and Crosby. Born and raised in Guguletu, South Africa, one of Cape Town's roughest ghettos, Chronic Clan lends their music studio to local youth so they can spread the positive healing that comes with music. Their music is a mix of reggae, dancehall, hip-hop, and R&B. The conscious lyrics and their uplifting message has put them on stage with reggae icon Rita Marley. Great world beat music, like Chronic Clan, reminds us that our struggle is global and we all stand together. For more information on this artist, visit music.podshow.com, and you can check our links at stash.normal.org, where you can download the MP3. This is Chronic Clan with their song, Gimme Da Weed.
Ayo, I am blazing the rasta. A high grade. Wanna pass me some?
And it's a dope thing, man. A wicked ganja. Lord, God, tell the policeman be free with. Ayo!
Ganja fi blaze, ganja fi blaze, ganja fi blaze, ganja. good meditation. Ganja fi blaze, ganja fi blaze. Ganja fi blaze, ganja fi blaze. Ganja fi blaze, ganja fi blaze. Well, give me the ganja, get a good meditation. In a morning, we in a evening. We been in a evening, we in a daytime. We been in downtown, we are going to the top town. Oi, Babylon, them can't stop this one. Coin in Africa, we used to smoke in ganja. And we never experience about no cancer. Till in Babylon, them are broken.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. All right, here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're proud to welcome back Bill Rittenberg, who's a criminal defense attorney specializing in civil rights, working in New Orleans, Louisiana. He's also a member of the Normal Legal Committee. Bill, welcome back to the Audio Stash.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we were talking the other day after we'd gotten off the air about civil rights and how the fight for medical marijuana sometimes overlaps that. And you wanted to mention something about, well, there's people oftentimes that call for states' rights to medical marijuana. And maybe some of the younger folks out there really don't understand what that whole states' rights claim, how that resonates down in the South. So maybe you could fill our listeners in on that.
Yes. Well, let me start by saying we're all friends. I'm obviously an advocate of medical marijuana being legalized and being used freely. Us old civil rights lawyers from the South, here are our friends in California and a few other states saying that there should be medical marijuana and that it's a states' rights issue. And that causes some of us old people to cringe because what we remember about civil rights is that was the excuse to have legalized slavery. Civil rights was the right of states to segregate and not allow African Americans to go to the same bathrooms or schools or public transportation as white Americans. The concern is that a constitutional principle should not be something that a state has a right to exercise. The constitutional principle should be the bottom line for all of the states. And those of us in more conservative states shouldn't be left out in the cold if it's a constitutional right or a civil right. And I believe the right to use marijuana medically, and in fact the right to use marijuana recreationally, should be protected by the constitutional right to privacy. And that should apply in every state, not just the states where there's a majority that wants it.
So then to turn to a states' rights argument then is dangerous from the idea that, if we're going to say a state has the right to eliminate one right for people, they could eliminate all rights for people.
That and the fact is that there's a minimum, the First Amendment gives us freedom of speech and freedom of religion. It shouldn't give us freedom of speech in California, but not allow us freedom of speech in Louisiana. And the argument of states' rights for the medical right to marijuana basically states, we in California want to have a constitutional right to use marijuana for medicine, and we don't care about the rest of the country. And it's understandable that they take that position, but the end result is the implication that in states with more conservative populations, they don't have that right. And let me underline, one of the important things about the Bill of Rights is that it doesn't protect the rights of the majority. It protects the rights of the minority. And so once you start bringing in states' rights, you're saying the rights of the majority of the state trump the individual right to privacy, to smoke marijuana in the privacy of your home where you're not hurting anybody.
So in a sense, if we acknowledge California's right to have medical marijuana, on the flip side, we're kind of saying that states have the right to not grant medical marijuana.
Exactly. If you're talking about it as a states' rights issue, then states get to decide it. If you're talking about it as a minimal constitutional right principle that's protected by the U.S. Constitution, then it has to apply in all states, regardless of the majority. You know, and a majority of this country probably wouldn't pass the Bill of Rights if it was put up for election today, but the whole point of it is it's supposed to protect us from the majority, not just give us the will of the majority.
Absolutely. Well, you know, of course, you and I were in perfect agreement here about that all of the states should have the right to medical marijuana. It should
sure.
be a federal right under, like you said, the privacy protections that... Well, now, speaking of the privacy protections, let's go to that. I know that a lot of what we consider as our privacy rights here in America were determined as kind of implied or unin... I have to remember that term.
Well, the privacy rights started with a case called Griswold versus Connecticut, which said that the marital bed was private and you couldn't arrest a doctor. Believe it or not, a doctor was arrested in the 60s for distributing a birth control device. And the Supreme Court said that the right to marital privacy protected that. That was extended in Roe versus Wade to say that a woman had a right to privacy over her body in deciding whether or not to get an abortion. But the privacy rights are there by a thin thread. They only exist since the 60s. And the implication was that if it's not affecting the rest of society and it's your own personal preference, you should have a constitutional protection for that. I want people to be able to use medical marijuana in California, but it should be a right that applies to every state.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, was with the privacy rights aren't directly outlined in the Constitution. They call them the unenumerated right to privacy under, what is it, the penumbra.
Well, the decision basically said it was implied by reading the First and the Third and Fourth and Fifth and Sixth and Seventh and Eighth Amendments together. Justice Douglas talked about the penumbra, which is a famous phrase where it's implied by reading the Bill of Rights. And it's hard to read that you have a right to free expression and you have a right to speech and you have a right to religion and you have a right against self-incrimination without implying that you have a right to privacy.
Absolutely.
And that's what they determined. And I think most Americans would be shocked to think that they didn't have a right to privacy. But again, like I say, if we go back to states' rights, then the states would decide what rights you had and you wouldn't have the protection of the U.S. Constitution.
And that's always been something that I found interesting when we look at Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose, how we're talking about a citizen's right to control what they do with their body, with birth control, that they take a specific, that they have the right to take a certain kind of medicine under a doctor's supervision. And how is it that right to privacy isn't protecting the people that want to use medical marijuana? What are the feds using to trump that?
It's real. They're using very, very conservative judges that George W. Bush has helped appoint, along with his father and Ronald Reagan. But it's really hard to imagine. I mean, they all of the reasons the government gives for keeping marijuana as a non-medical use drug are just absurd. And you know, they talk about it being an advertisement for people to use illegal drugs, but we give people morphine, we
we give people all kinds of incredibly dangerous drugs is legal medicine. The only difference I see on marijuana is not the legal-illegal issue, is that there's no pharmaceutical patent on marijuana, and so there's no drug company making billions of dollars selling it, and there's no incentive of any company to spend the multi-millions of dollars that are required to get the FDA to approve a drug as a legal drug for medical use. But other than that, I mean, the arguments are overwhelmingly in favor of allowing marijuana for medical use, and they're also overwhelmingly in favor of allowing marijuana to be decriminalized, because the only argument against decriminalizing marijuana that I know is that it would cause great unemployment of prison guards.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that, would we? Locking up less of our people. When America locks up more people per capita than any other country in the world.
Astounding. Yeah.
Now
we kill more. You know, we have capital punishment. Only the most primitive of countries still have capital punishment.
Yeah. It's sad. And, you know, the logic that they use here is just so tortured, you know, when they're trying to withhold our rights to use marijuana. And they always come back to this Commerce Clause argument where they say, well, it affects interstate commerce, even though in the case of medical marijuana, many times it's never bought, it's never sold, it's always done within the state. So it seems like a tough argument to make to me. But we're about out of time here for our interview. So I do want to thank Bill Rittenberg, who's a criminal defense attorney specializing in civil rights in New Orleans, Louisiana, and, of course, a member of the Normal Legal Committee. Bill, thanks for joining us again.
It's
here on the Stash. All right. Take it easy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from
Michael Landon, the actor who starred in Bonanza and Little House on the Prairie. Quote, "If drugs were legalized tomorrow, my kids wouldn't take drugs. People who take drugs, take drugs. So to spend billions a year trying to find out where somebody's growing a marijuana plant, I think is ridiculous." End quote. Thanks for joining us on The Stash. Tune in tomorrow, Friday, with our cannabis community and Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. We'll see you later, and take care, everybody.